Mini episode 1910 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1910. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. And much of the time that we have been on the show, it's to talk basketball. He's our chief hoops analyst. But ever since 2020, I think the early days of the pandemic, we've also had a running mini series going on the show here, looking at the business of the streaming industry. Ben and I are big nerds about the business of the streaming industry. And an earthquake hit this week when it was surprising to me on the timetable of it that it unfolded so quickly, but we now go the other way. It will not be Netflix that will be acquiring Warner Media. It will be Paramount. Warner Media, that was a thing where when they communicated that the better deal was Paramount, Netflix got out of it right quick, and then it kind of snapped back the other way. So we're going to look at a few other headlines as well, but this is the monster headline out of the bunch here, one of the biggest developments in the streaming industry. And we'll talk about some of the other non-streaming ramifications of it, because there's a bunch of them. But this is a thing where, again, I've been complaining for a period of time as somebody who has been more so a short-term subscriber to Paramount Plus, that like, it doesn't really have very much. Right now, I find myself using it primarily for old Hawaii Five-0, and I don't mean from the 2010s, I mean from the original, once I got through Mayor of Kingstown season 4. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, you put it together with HBO Max, and that is going to make a big difference. And Ben Chu, I know that's a thing we're talking to you. We've talked about this, that like HBO Max, a tremendous back catalog, but I know your critique a lot of times has been, what's the pace of new must-see stuff going up in there? Well, obviously, there's Industry, which we are recording this just on the verge here of the Industry season 4 finale. But outside of that, your point is very well taken, that they kind of, at this point in time, kind of stretch out, space out these things. But you put the two of these entities together, and that is going to be one of the must-have apps out there. And I think the pricing is probably going to reflect that.
And I think the real question ultimately, Rick, is going to be is how Paramount decides this merger is going to work and how they're going to put it together, because that was one of the big questions with Netflix overall. There was initial thought by Ted Sarandos they wanted to keep them separate, but I have a feeling if I'm Paramount, why in the world would we keep them separate? Why don't we just combine the two and have a higher cost for the customer? So it's not really surprising. I don't think must have is the right word right now, because we are talking about two of the smaller streaming services at this period of time here.
Well, I mean, the HBO Max catalog is substantial.
No, but what I'm saying, I'm just talking in terms of just pure subscriber numbers.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's but that's, but I'm just, you know, you put them together and I think that it's really going to exponentially, you know, increase the attractiveness of it. And that's a thing where when you look at it and putting it all under the Paramount Plus banner makes sense, because for as much as we goofed on this at the show at the time, going from HBO Max to HBO Max again, I mean, nothing is sacred there. It's not like this brand has held up over a long period of time. I mean, are we even a year since it last became HBO Max? So I think it's putting it all under the Paramount Plus banner makes sense. But as far as the way that things have been described recently on Twitter here, just to use some of the terminology. So this got to a situation with Larry Ellison where I guess you could say that he was bid-maxing at this point in time here, bid-mocking, maybe a little bit of gesture-maxing as far as the presentation of it, causing the cortisol to spike for Ted Sarandos. So, and with that, I give you the Steve Buscemi greetings, fellow kids, for using that terminology, Ben.
Right, and again, too, like, this is a... We know Ted Sarandos, Netflix's CEO. We know his style. He's very... he likes to make deals, but he also likes to make deals in favor of Netflix. And we've seen so far a lot of the stuff they've acquired in recent memory, including WWE Raw, you know, the Christmas Day NFL games, you know, the Major League Baseball opener. Like, it's very focused in on if it works for us and we can get at a fair price, we like it. But it's very clear that at the end of the day, it just was not going to be it. And I think one of the big questions that's going to come from this is that I know, especially within the financial markets, like, we saw, you know, Netflix shoot up stock price after this relatively quick. I think it went up by like 8% over the last 48 hours or 72 hours during that period of time. And it's going to be interesting to see how Paramount integrates HBO, whatever the true plans. And remember, I think we all tend to forget, in the Netflix deal, it was mainly just for HBO.
Yes.
We're also including all the cable channels, we're including CNN, we're including, you know, a lot of the stuff from like Oxygen, stuff like that too. So it's going to be a really sort of interesting scenario. Cause again, like I said, I think it's going to be a streamer to watch. It's obviously, if we combine both of them, it's going to catapult them up at least past Peacock at this period of time.
Sure.
So they're going to at least have a subscriber base of roughly over 100 million people at that point. So it's going to be a very interesting. But in all honesty, Rick, I think this is more for the IP more than anything else, because HBO Max as a subscription service was still pretty much on the lower tier at that point.
Yes.
Like, not on the top tier, which obviously includes like Netflix and Amazon Prime. But at this point, I think it's a good acquisition. Obviously, I think the movie studio stuff from like just the IP of like Harry Potter and, you know, stuff, you know, just all the Warner IP that they have that kind of under the David Zaslav regime hasn't really been used that much.
Mm-hmm.
Paramount will have the opportunity to acquire. And again, this is also in terms of, if I had to say, HBO Max is more of a throw-in in this deal. This is much more focused in on the movie studios and a lot of the IP that's coming from Warner Brothers over.
It is. Again, you look at some of the programming that is on some of the cable channels here, and I know it's been reported on this week that there would have to be a bit of renegotiation to be able to move some of the properties here. But I mean, you have to believe on a common sense basis that all the parties are going to agree to this. You have the capacity now under this new system that they're going to have all under the Paramount banner, that this could be for the first time since 1993. You could be seeing MLB back on CBS. You have to think that that's the case, because you're going to have the entirety of Turner Sports now being subsumed by CBS Sports. So it's going to make sense to move at least some of that onto there. The NHL as well. Stanley Cup Finals possibly in rotating years on CBS. You're going to draw a much better number than what you would draw on TNT, no question about that. So you'd have to renegotiate that to make it happen, but it would seem like everybody would want that to be the case, particularly the sports leagues themselves and the conferences, where you now have had Turner Sports covering some college football and college basketball. I think it was primarily the Big 12. There was a little bit of other inventory that they had bought up over a period of time. And they'd gotten almost sort of the pity thing from ESPN for the college football playoff of the two games going up against the NFL, the first weekend worth of games here. All of a sudden, those are things where you now have an entity that is very powerful in its own right. And oh, by the way, between the mothership of CBS and what will now be all the different cable channels here, they'll control all of March Madness for the remainder of that deal. And I know that that deal only goes, I think, another couple of years, but
it's 2029, if I'm not.
I think so. Yeah. They're going to be very, very well poised to hang on to it. And I had a joke here that I was going to use as the example, the North Coast Zone, Ali LaForce here, but I come to find out that that's dated and Kevin Harlan. But the person that's going to benefit the most from this, I will say, is Spiro Dedis, because now he's going to get one less W-2 in the mail, Ben Chu. It'll all be under one banner.
They need to make Spiro's life easier. But I mean, one of the big things that we also do have to talk about in this sort of deal, Rick, is that they are also gaining some of the social background from Turner Sports. We talked about House of Highlights and Bleacher Report being very important to the brand overall. So
yep.
CBS, I would say, social media wise, has been lacking a little bit in the sports department. I know a lot of people, they have, you know, their own accounts, they have a lot of followers, but gaining House of Highlights and gaining some of these brands that you can now put under your own tentpole for sports. Right. And then again, too, we truly do not know what the final finality of what Turner Sports is going to be or anything along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think we're going to see a lot of sharing. We're going to see some things get promoted, maybe simulcasted, like we've seen with what NBC did with rebranding a newer NBC Sports Network.
Yeah, that's true. And as far as like multicasts for things, we've already seen a little bit of that with the Final Four. And that's been a thing where it's ironically, that has moved back and forth over a period of time the last several years between TBS/TNT and CBS. Of course, it'll all be under the same banner now. And when I was looking at this today, again, the history of this, you talked about this before, the IP, the different studios, the Paramount and Warner Brothers studios, very, very historic all throughout, you know, the entire run of Hollywood. But even going back to kind of lesser things here along the way and any kind of intermingling that there's been over the decades, like, for example, I knew that the CW network, I knew that it had some degree of participation from both entities when it got launched. I did not realize that that's where the actual initials come from. The C is CBS, the W is Warner Brothers. Here we go. And that's the thing where now they only own a small piece of that, but it is still a piece notwithstanding. And that's where you start to look at any of the type of potential conflicts or anything like that that are going to come out of this. And of course, one of the things I'm going to zero in on as a big AEW mark is what happens to them now, because Paramount has, again, that small stake in the CW, which carries, of course, the developmental brand here, NXT. But beyond that, this entire thing from the sister arm of TKO with the UFC. So you're going to have the UFC on the same platform as AEW. Methinks you're not going to be getting any cross kind of, you know, promotion here between. Be sure to be tuned in for. You won't be seeing any of that stuff here. So I think AEW is probably safe for the remainder of their deal, but it's going to take a very big player out of the mix and possibly drive them to, you know, potentially an Amazon or somebody like that, one of the lone remaining entities that might have any real kind of pockets here. So there's all kinds of different aspects here as far as potential conflicts and exclusive relationships and everything like that, and things that may not be so exclusive anymore, at least for a period of time, once these entities come together.
Right. And again, we also still have to note that this is still a tentative agreement at this point. It still has to clear the FCC yep. and all these other legal hurdles, which again, yeah. it feels more like it's kind of it's going to happen. But again, we always have to be clear that this is a tentative agreement at this time.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. But again, you can always expect in this timeline too, there will be some pushback because we haven't had honestly, since like AT&T and Time Warner, we haven't had a major media merger recently in a bit. It's like, this is probably the most notable acquisition in the entertainment industry we've seen in at least the last 10 years.
Well, yeah, and one of the things too, when you go back over a period of time, that the assets that have been under Warner Media in one name, one form or fashion or another, it has really gotten bounced around for the entirety of the 21st century. You go back to the AOL Time Warner merger back in the day, and again, I am truly hoping as a fan of the programs that past is not prologue, because the thing that basically, you know, destroyed the better part of the industry for 18 years was handing Vinnie Mac a de facto monopoly from 2001 to 2019, until, ironically, it was the Turner Networks that then put AEW on the air, replacing WCW from back in the day. It was the AOL Time Warner merger and taking Ted Turner, who was the big proponent of WCW, sidelining him. So you look at this again, and it's just like, I really hope this isn't here we go again, as far as, you know, and what that could do to the business. But getting bounced from there to, as you said, it was the AT&T deal, the Discovery deal a couple of years later. Like, this could be famous last words on my part, but like, this is it. This is the final destination, Ben Chu. This is where they're ending up. Like, Paramount didn't buy them to spin them off in a few years, whatever. No. Paramount's buying them to get bigger, to swallow them whole and absorb what they have and make them part of their brand going forward. This is where they land after all these false finishes over the years of here, 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 and here. This is it for them.
And clear, like I mentioned earlier in this episode, like it's clear that this was an IP play more than anything else.
I think so.
And that this was the big thing, like everything else in terms of like social, in terms of TV networks, like this is clear that David Ellison clearly was analyzing this and realized that this is a great opportunity to acquire more assets to be under the Paramount banner. Because right now, if we're going to be totally honest, at the end of the day, we're probably pushing towards a scenario of maybe having like 3 to 4 major streaming services at the end of the day. We knew this was going to come at some point because you can only have a bifurcation of streaming, yep, of top streaming services for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. This is part of the culling here. It's probably going to be HBO Max falling by the wayside. And there are already, and as we've been saying, again, it's early days. It's still got to go through a review. The fact that the Justice Department is going to be 1,000,000% inclined to wave it through, that's not necessarily the only part of this thing. Some states may have a role in this. California.
And also, there will be discussions of monopolistic tendencies as well. That usually comes up in mergers of and acquisitions of this nature. And it would not shock me either, Rick, that we could see a scenario at some point where the deal that is currently placed in front of us looks a little bit different, or maybe they find some sort of, you know, to appease some of the other government entities. Maybe they like spin off the TV channels. Maybe they just move some stuff around. Maybe it's just essentially the movie studios and the IP. We'll see. There's still a lot of, this is the tentative deal is done right now. The real question is, is this going to be what we saw? Because the only thing I can even really equate this out to would be like Microsoft during those antitrust lawsuits, during that antitrust case, excuse me. And it is going to, this is probably one of the more bigger, like in terms of just media within those, I mean, just within the entertainment landscape in the last 10 years. And it's going to be really interesting to see what comes of it. But if there, I feel like there's a lot of winners here. Even Netflix is a winner in here because essentially they got $3 billion for just, you know, backdoor talking to David Zaslav. So,
Here's your F off fee, basically. But, you know, the state of California, they're making some noises about trying to hold this thing up. And there's already
go ahead, Rick.
No, I was going to say, there's also some talk in Congress that, like, you can do this, but we're going to unwind it when there's a new administration. And I mean, as far as all the things that a political party is going to put political capital in, and nobody's ever gotten elected on, we're going to break up this company. I mean, unless it's something really popular, like a utility or something like that, nobody gives two craps about breaking up a media company. I mean, we haven't really
even seen that at least over the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Any MA really not go forward. And we all know in this time too, any entertainment entity, like we saw Central Avenue with TikTok on the proposed ban and all that, how all that has played out. We've all seen that entertainment companies usually get their stuff pushed through.
Well, and the other thing too, it's going to be a monopoly. Barry Weiss is going to be running CNN as well as CBS. And it's like, is it going to be funny to a guy like me to see her tell Brian Stelter and some of these guys to hit the curb? Yeah, probably, admittedly. But I mean, to act like that's in any way, shape or form going to, you know, like control like the discourse in America in 2026. I go back 10 years and it's a circumstance where, because I've always been a guy and I've always had a little bit of a philosophical disagreement with FDH Lounge fellow original dignitary Chris Galloway. Like I've always agreed with him on the whole thing, like the constitutionality of political spending and that kind of stuff. Unlike him, I've wished that there was what I might feel it might be a constitutional way to do something about this, but like I agree with him that there's not, and he's unrepentant about the fact that there's not. And I've just been like, but I wish there was a way. But you get to 2016, and somebody like Jeb Bush is sitting there with $100 million, and previously that might have determined everything. And I remember I think I said on the show that year, like some kid making memes in a dorm room now has more power than Jeb Bush and his $100 million. You saw how much that money got him that year. So this entire thing that like, oh, Barry Weiss controlling two of the top organs in America, they're going to be state TV. It's going to brainwash all the American people. No, it is not. there's too many voices. There's too many avenues at this point in time. And if you're looking at an administration that's as unpopular as it is presently. Like, oh, Barry Weiss is magically going to drag them up to 70% approval in the polls. It doesn't work that way. It's 2026. So, I mean, in a standard kind of old school missionary position kind of a way, I see where you might look at media consolidation in that way. Oh, that's dangerous. Today, it doesn't matter, Ben. People get their opinions, their news, and everything else from such a variety of sources. Nobody can monopolize a political perspective in America today.
I think the only real concern at this point, if we're being honest, is it's more in terms of the merger, depending on how everything plays out. I think the bigger question is going to be the layoffs that are coming.
Yes.
Obviously, that's redundancies. Going to be a thing that's probably going to get discussed.
Yep.
During the acquisition and those meetings that they'll have to have with the FCC, and just because, again, like, anytime you have a huge consolidation, you're going to have overlap. And while I think everything will probably stay the same, we've seen, at least in recent memory over the last year or so, like, layoffs are more popular than ever these days. So it kind of feels like we'll have to wait and see who moves around. If there's, you know, there will be, it's an interesting scenario because HBO was already in, under David Zaslav, in cost-cutting mode at that time. So it felt like now there may be a little bit more stability, but then again, you're merging with another company that already has a huge reach right now. Now, obviously, I think everything will be its own independent entity still.
Yeah.
But I also still, but again, I do wonder if some of these other cable networks or some of these other things do get spun off or get essentially derailed by this, because, you know, Paramount is mainly acquiring IP and, you know, IP in the movie studio. Those are the two big things that they're focusing on. So all the other parts, we're going to see how those flux at periods of time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, again, and where I kind of questioned when NBC Universal actually went through with what Zaslav was talking about doing, cleaving off the thing. And, you know, you basically put your cable channels, most of them, out on an ice floe here. I continue to look at this and kind of think, what's going to be the attractiveness of those entities to any type of a streaming service going forward? And again, you've just taken some potential streaming content away from Peacock. So that's a thing where I still kind of question the whole, you know, modality of you're going to kind of split things off in this way. Not to say that Paramount may not look at doing it at a certain point, but I also was thinking about this a little bit here, that it may go the other way as far as, again, importing stuff to the mothership. I mean, for as much as we talk about the Tiffany Network and everything that they've stood for allegedly over time with, like, quality programming and stuff, okay, for the last 26 years, it's also been the home of Survivor, where people eat bugs and stuff. So it's not like they're not willing to go there, right? I could see some of the stuff possibly from, you know, Discovery, some of their, you know, reality type shows and whatever. I could see some of that migrating onto CBS, maybe some of the quote unquote higher toned stuff. But then again, maybe not. Maybe we're, I don't know what channel Dr. Pimple Popper's on. I think that's under their banner, but, like, it's a thing. You and I have talked about this over a period of time. Network cost cutting in prime time since the pandemic. Like, during the pandemic, like, okay, we got to fill time with this stuff. And then you come out of the pandemic, it's like, wait a minute, why are we spending all this money on dramas and sitcoms and whatever when we can just fill it with stuff and basically make it like the 1950s again with game shows and filler like that? So it's like, tell me you're not going to be seeing some of that kind of stuff coming to CBS, because I'm telling you right now, I think it's going to happen.
And I think it's going to be part of how just overall a lot of these things change. And it's going to be interesting, too, because Paramount, I believe, at this period of time, they were just above Peacock in terms of subscriber rate, subscriber numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll definitely be subsuming a lot of those HBO Max subscribers. But it's not going to, I could be wrong, Rick, but I don't believe if you combine the two that they're still going to outflank Amazon Prime and Netflix at this time.
Probably not, but it's a thing where, and again, I've laughed about this over a period of time, the incompetent decision years ago for Paramount to outsource the streaming for Yellowstone to Peacock. Like, whatever money you made on that cash grab can't come close to what you've lost in potential subscribers here. But the rest of the Sheridanverse has existed there at Paramount Plus. I mean, and you get guys like me to like, hey, Mayor of Kingstown is back. I will do a short-term subscription. I got a gift card to watch this. So it's like the fact that they're losing the Sheridanverse in 2029, that's not a big factor in this, but it's not a non-factor in this either, because you're bringing in HBO and the entire universe of things that people would want to subscribe for. So the fact that every Taylor Sheridan project from here on in, I think it's all going to be new ones, by the way. So like, they're going to hope that they can find a new, you know, if not Yellowstone, then at least Mayor of Kingstown, a new Tulsa King, a new Landman, whatever. But he has shown the ability to keep cranking these things out. You have to believe that he will manage to do that for Peacock. And now they have, again, you don't spend all this money to hedge yourself on the Sheridanverse leaving, but it was a consideration somewhere, even if it was a small one, and now they've covered themselves on that.
Right. And again, too, my thing is that we've always thought, I mean, I think just the general perception is that CBS is skews older in terms of their programming. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely good to get some of the more younger content that would be coming over from the HBO Max team. And also, I was just double checking the numbers. So yeah, with the acquisition, they would still be technically fourth combined. So they would have, these are all just approximate numbers. So they would be fourth. They'd still be behind Disney Plus. They'd still be behind Prime Video, and they'd still be behind Netflix. But combined now, they get a little bit closer to both Prime and Disney
okay.
Plus. So and it's roughly 200 million, and then both Disney Plus and Prime will have over 205.
And that's the whole thing, too, is that, like, and we've always said over a period of time, you've got to put a little bit of an asterisk on the Prime numbers, because there's a whole bunch of people in the world, like my brother, who have it primarily for the free shipping. And, like, if there's anything that's on, hey, this is great. I get to watch this. But it's not the reason they get it, like we get all these other streaming services.
Correct.
So the competition is a bit skewed when it gets to that. But, yes, the other ones, it is sort of apples to apples. And when you look at this also, too, in terms of Netflix, in terms of them as a competitor, what Netflix was going to be if they absorbed the Warner Studio into the mix, and if they ended up being able to have all of that there available just on their platform, what that was going to do to the theater business. So that's in Hollywood, there's a big sigh of relief right now that you're not, you don't have that gun pointed at the temple of the theater business in terms of Netflix taking a huge studio off of the map. But then it becomes a matter of, well, okay, with this consolidation, what's this going to be? All the players right now, they're all saying the right things. We want to have as many movies coming out every year as we have had, and that we see no benefit in curtailing the number of movies that are being made, and that the studios may, and the IP to a certain extent, be kept separate in that regard. I don't think it'll happen at the TV level, but at the studio level, I think it's far more feasible, because you have two very, very, very historic brands there. But again, there will be, of course, the redundancies in the front office and everything else like that. So, I mean, you know, together, but not necessarily branded together is what it sounds like it's going to be.
Yeah. And I think that's probably for both of these entities, the best case scenario, because ultimately if HBO is just on Paramount Plus, I think it's fine. And we you discussed it earlier too. Like, there's name recognition with HBO Max, but it's nowhere near, you know, those numbers.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. And again, I've been saying for quite a while now that, like, Paramount Plus, like, and I was kind of like, I don't know what they can do to really step up short of really any kind of a merger. Previously, right, there had been thought of potentially a merger with, if not all of NBC Universal, at least with Peacock, of putting the streaming entities together here. And that's where, again, I think the whole notion now that we will see any of these entities divorced from the streaming arm, I was always very dubious that that was going to be the case. And particularly now the consolidation at Disney, which I think is long overdue, of where HBO is being subsumed into Disney Plus, that, again, you can't make it with a bunch of things under one heading, because the consumer wants to have essentially as few of these things as possible and getting as much programming as possible. And this is another step in that direction, even bigger than Disney subsuming Hulu, which they are in the process of doing. You're getting to where, like you said before, you've got just a couple of these big things that are going to be going forward. This was always more kind of the end game of where this was going. So the notion that, again, any of these, like, oh, you know, maybe the streaming services of these things will merge. No, from here on in, I think it's a thing of like dog eat dog, and you are out to take out not only your competitors in the TV biz, but in the streaming biz. You will never be anything more than a bundle partner with somebody, if that, if the bundling even kind of keeps going to the degree that it does. And you look at that and you look at some of the ramifications out of this. And like I said before, for the thing like Versant, what ends up happening with them, like, I continue to predict that those channels are probably going to get bought up by somebody, and it's probably not going to be for a whole heck of a lot of money, but they're out there, like, they're gonna, I think, have a hard time finding a streaming partner to license with, essentially, with their content. And again, some of these entities are going to be looking for, some of the streamers are going to be looking for more content for it. So that's my guess, is that it ends up where they end up getting absorbed by somebody, because there's this notion of sort of being an independent in this market, and we're just going to do this and we're just going to kind of exist this way. And you saw it a little bit. I was surprised with the Olympics at how much programming was still on the former NBC Universal channels, like USA, CNBC, etc. We're still in that weird kind of in-between spot with that there, but like what these ones end up doing as they go forward. And it's funny too, to me, like, you know, in my extreme youth, like remembering there being a thing of like USA Sports, like that's actually coming back now. That's actually being a thing now that they're not going to be under the NBC banner anymore. But yeah, it's going to be a thing of where everybody is just going to be trying to be as a part of as big of an entity to partner with as humanly possible, I think.
Right. And this could also potentially renew some discussions between Peacock and Apple TV Plus at some point, because they're right now the two lowest on the totem pole. And we have seen them share programming over the lot. They've had an agreement, I believe, since mid 2025 that they occasionally share content on there. So
okay,
it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because those are two very big entities, but now their streaming services are going to get dwarfed by four major ones. So it's going to be interesting to see what the reaction to this deal is going to be from the smaller players now.
Yeah, and it's crazy to consider anything with the pockets of Apple TV as being a smaller player, but you know, they legitimately are. And as much as, again, you and I have talked about this extensively on the show, they have had some of the finest dramas in the recent history of TV, whether it be Severance, or you know, whether it be, you know, The Morning Show, some of the other things that they've had, that it's going to be very, very difficult, you know, going forward to kind of stay at that level. They've basically sort of, by having some of the great programming that they have and still being at that level and starting to spend for some sports projects here. But again, F1, how much is that going to bring in terms of F1? How much has the MLS done? I mean, I think that would kind of serve as a good guide for what's going to happen from here. Like them and NBC joining forces in any kind of fashion here, it would be very interesting. And that's where, again, a lot of times it's sort of like the egos in the room and everything like that. NBC might have to accommodate themselves to the egos over at Apple, but boy, if they pooled their resources, and I don't think we're necessarily looking at any type of acquisition of NBC Universal by Apple, but any kind of high powered kind of collaboration between them, that might lead to a sharing of the streaming services or a blurring or anything else like that. And the ability for Apple to take some of these things here and maybe get some money from NBC to put maybe a little bit of the F1 stuff on NBC, make some money that way, potentially by leasing out some of these things here. So as much as I said before that, you know, you may not be as much of a thing with collaborating between entities here, when you're talking about the two lowest ones here among the big ones here, the lowest of the big, That's where it might get a little bit different. That's where maybe pooling their resources, coming together and seeing what they can do collaboratively. You know, it would be more so in their interest than it would be any of the folks ahead of them on the pecking order to join up in any form or fashion. They have no incentive to do so. But those two, yeah, you might be onto something there, Ben.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening there. But I when it was like the market of seven of the major players, it was okay. It was acceptable to be a smaller streamer. Mm-hmm. Now I do wonder, with now we have four big ones, and then now we have like Apple TV and Peacock being the lower on the totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
It would make some logical sense for them to put together some form of agreement in the future. Just not essentially just ending, not like subsuming each other, but essentially just doing the best they can.
Yeah.
To continue to share content and share subscribers, essentially.
Yeah, there might be a lot that they could do together there that might collectively, between their resources and everything that they have, catapult them up into that conversation with the bigger boys. That really would be interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. That'll be a real clip and save for us to take a look at. And as far as it goes with NBC and Peacock, we're going to take a look at some of the other headlines happening in the biz right now too. And again, this is worth noting just because, again, there is a streaming element to this as far as this occurring on Peacock. But one of the things that you had flagged for me was with NBC Sports and Peacock occurring, of course, on the mothership on NBC on Tuesday, this whole big kind of throwback that they're going to be doing with NBC Sports, and a throwback to 85, 86 of where I think they're going to be using some of the graphics packages. And ultimately, the irony is that I think NBC, or maybe it was 95, 96. Yeah. I was going to say they didn't have the NBA in 85, 86, yeah. Which, by the way,
yes.
The CBS, the one thing that makes me sad, we came this close. If Zaslav had hung on to the NBA, what I said before about the NHL and MLB at least making some cameos on CBS, we could have been this close to that epic CBS Sports NBA music from the 80s playing for NBA games again. We're not going to have that. But from 95, 96, what NBC was doing with the coverage, and you're bringing back in, as well as Bob Costas, Mike Fratello, I think Doug Collins, and a bunch of others. Even Hannah Storm is going to be back on this, making a guest appearance from ESPN. So this is something where, again, the ability to have this on the streamer as well, that'll be something of great interest to any of the cord cutters out there. But that's another big sort of ripple in the media landscape that NBC has been very, very effective in. I think Bob Costas was like, I don't know if you call it nostalgia or what, but leveraging the memories of when the NBA was on NBC previously. They've done that a lot this season, and it seems to have gone over very well.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, just overall for them, it's, we all kind of saw this coming when they essentially signed Sunday Night Baseball and brought Costas back. At some point, we all knew that these moments, and again, we're in this weird sort of timeline now where everything old is new again, and it doesn't feel like it's been 30 years since the glory days of the NBA on NBC, but it's been 30 years, so there's a lot of people out there that enjoyed that time, and now they're going to have an entire thing, and it would not shock me to see a lot more of these sort of style of events happen, because we saw it last year with CBS with the NFL Today doing the, I believe it was their 35th anniversary, I believe.
I think so.
Or 45th, I can't remember the exact number. But
yeah,
having that throwback show with Brent Musburger and everyone dressed in the 70s regalia. So it's a very, excuse me, I believe it was 50 years.
Yeah. Yes, 50 years, NFL Today, yes.
NFL Today, yeah. So we saw what that is. We'll see what NBC decides to do with it, but they've been leaning pretty much very heavily into nostalgia, very heavily into, at least with their NBA coverage, and I think we'll start to see this with their baseball coverage too, very leaning into the pageantry. I think they took a, at least based off of a lot of the stuff that we've seen, both Amazon Prime and them, took a lot of notes from what a lot of people were criticizing ESPN and Turner for the last couple of years in terms of just being too much, like losing some of the luster of the league in terms of the pageantry and the starting lineups and all those other things that kind of were forgotten in that period of time. But I think also too, for Peacock, just overall is that if we're talking also back to the Paramount acquisition, it's going to be a very interesting thing to see in terms of what sports rights they might go after now. Because obviously right now, Paramount, I would assume, pretty much tapped out at this time. So I know every, you know, the Ellisons still have Boku Bucks. But at the end of the day, I do wonder if some of these rights deals are going to come up relatively soon if someone decides to go after them potentially, whether it's an ESPN, whether it's a NBC, whether it's, you know, Apple TV. It's going to be very interesting to see how all these little smaller entities deal with that acquisition.
Well, the biggest one by far always is you start to get into what's going on with the NFL. They are going to be opening up their package for betting, I think, as early as 2029 is what we've been seeing here. So they're going to do the opt-out and try and claw back more cash as they always do. And there's been talk that some of these leagues or some of the networks might be prioritizing that as far as like, well, if you got this other thing coming up, we may have to let them go. So as far as like Fox, ironically, this year with the World Cup, I think that's a lame duck months before the first game ever, you know, kicks off on Fox, because they're already kind of signaling they're not going to have the money for it going forward. They're going to need to allocate that towards keeping the NFL. It's going to be towards, I think it's a longer term deal with the Big Ten, but towards keeping the Big Ten. They can't afford to let that go. If you've got the Big Ten or the SEC in college football, you need to hold on to that very, very tightly. So we're going to see this kind of prioritization. And that's where, again, Paramount, like in the world of college football, which is in the last couple of years just gotten to be bigger and bigger and bigger financially, they've basically like the third best package on the Big Ten. That doesn't really help a whole heck of a lot. This is where, again, I think they might be looking to import some of at least the Big 12 stuff. But the way that the Big 12 sits right now, as we've been saying on the show, anytime we're talking college football, it's the conundrum of they have so many games in the course of the season, so many games that are meaningful for who are going to be the two teams that make it to the championship game. But the flip side of that is that none of those games basically matter into the big picture of who's going to be competing for the national title. You had a Texas Tech team that most people thought was probably the best positioned team in the 2 years of the expanded playoff, the 2 years of the Big 12 and the ACC sending a rep. Most people thought that this Texas Tech team was the most legit of any of them coming in here. Turns out Miami's the one that made a run. But again, you see that now, again, college basketball, and we've been talking about this a little bit as well. Big 12 college basketball, yeah, like that's a real thing right there. And that the numbers have been up, the interest has been up. And I've talked to you off air that this is a thing where, like, college basketball regular season, I would never describe it as being big. And I don't know that big is exactly the word I'd use now, but like it seems so much bigger than it generally has over the course of the last 20, 30 years. And that's where, again, CBS could benefit from that in the wintertime, at least, of getting some of that Big 12 inventory onto the mothership here as well. So there will be avenues where, and that's the thing where you're doing it sort of quasi from within, of where you're bringing over this stuff here. You're bringing over potentially, as I said before, some of the MLB content, some of the NHL content, and maybe that's what CBS looks to do from a network perspective first and foremost, as well as keeping March Madness, which they need to do, no question.
Right, and I think, you know, just going back to Peacock, they've been one of the biggest players in sports as of late.
Yep.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how the consolidation of CBS and HBO and essentially Paramount and Warner Brothers is impacted at this period of time. Yep. And it's going to be very interesting to try and determine like what else we got in terms of, we're going to see a lot of sports rights come up over the next decade or so. And we're going to see a lot of locations are going to have to overpay. So it's going to be very interesting to see. And then we also haven't even started talking about some of the newer sports that are coming up.
Right.
Essentially could be filling out some of these, you know, along the edges, stuff like the golf league, stuff like, you know, Unrivaled, stuff like all these sort of like smaller things that are growing.
Yes.
And like some of these more of these niche sports, and I hate using the word niche here, but you know, the smaller, you know, fan bases, we're going to start to see a lot of these companies start to go after their rights.
Yes, I think so. And for NBC, again, and you never hear any of this talk relative to all the talk about, oh, it's great they got Round Ball Rock back. But I'm here to say that the old NBC baseball themes, they had like a main one from the 80s and a secondary theme. I want to hear those on there as well. I want to hear those come back out as well since we're doing nostalgia. The fact that I haven't heard anybody else talking about this doesn't bode well for that.
No,
I think I'm in the tiny minority of people who care about that.
With the creation of Throwback,
yeah,
for NBC, I do think that will come to other sports under their protocol too.
Yeah, and that's where you'd see it. You'd see the game of the week, Saturday game of the week. You will see that music, even if it's just in a limited kind of a form. Yeah. But I don't see why you couldn't do it every week. But that's how I'm looking at it here. But as far as, again, other major developments going on with streaming or other aspects of the story we didn't hit, anything else come to mind?
Not that I can think of, no.
Okay. Yeah, we have broken it down pretty comprehensively, I believe so. But always a pleasure to get to do this with you, Ben Chu. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1910.